Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, brought to you by SeatGiant. Yes, if you need concert tickets, sporting event tickets, any sort of seats, you go to SeatGiant.ca. Why do you go there? Because it's Canadian-owned and it's operated. They guarantee every ticket to be legitimate. And most importantly, all the ticket prices are in Canadian dollar. No more conversions for you. No, sir. If it says $45, it is $45. Go to SeatGiant.ca. Use the discount code Bob and Matt to save money. That's Bob and Matt to save money at checkout. You save money. We get a small kickback. It's win-win. Hey, Bob, how you doing? I did a sneak attack commercial right off the top.
I did, Matthew. It actually makes sense because we have sponsors and we talk about them often in minute 55.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, like, what percentage of people do you think still listening at 55 minutes in?
Ah, see, people listen to all of it. That's the thing about podcasts. Anyone listening right now, and again, thank you. And if you're a new listener, that's Bob, I'm Matt. Most people engage to the end. And usually I try to get it somewhere in the midway point, but then people are going to get used to that. Bam, right off the top, SeatGiant.ca.
You're like a pitcher with four pitches, four plus pitches, Matt.
You snap
the slider or the changeup out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely March afternoon.
Cold, but sunny.
But crisp, brisk. Think of it that way.
No, September or late October, November, you like brisk. In this point on March 21st, you want warmth.
Yeah,
you want spring.
8 weeks ago, it was minus 40.
Yeah.
I'll take this.
All right.
It's progress.
It is progress. I'm greedy. I want it warmer. But I'll be in Florida tomorrow, so it'll be 27 and sunny every day.
How long are you going for?
10 days. I leave Thursday afternoon. I'm back the following Sunday, early evening.
So we better get a lot out of this pod.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to be doing one for 11 days.
So if we are going to...
So the playoffs will have started by then?
No. No. Playoffs
yet, right?
Don't start till around April 11th.
Right.
So no, we have plenty of time. Well, if we want to get a lot out of this, we might as well start with the most pressing matter. Not Raptors, not Leafs, not the Blue Jays. It is the copy of Wine Spectator magazine you've taken from my bathroom.
Well, this is big because it's the editor picks, our personal recommendations issue.
Yeah.
A couple things here, Matty. I was listening back to the pod the other day, and we start off by saying it's sports, wine, and life. We cover sports.
Yeah.
We talk about life a lot.
We do.
But we don't really talk about wine. It's just that people know you like it.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about it a lot because I know eventually your eyes are going to roll over, and I don't want to be too... look at this. I'm trying not to be too self-indulgent.
Yeah. Try harder. But anyway, so I wanted to talk to you about this issue of Wine Spectator, which is really big. It's
yeah.
a big magazine. And
it
I
is.
Mean in the sense that the pages themselves are big. It's like one of those kids' books, you know,
yeah.
big printing in it. So it's a diverse crowd on the front.
Yep.
It says editor's picks, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people.
Yep.
All of them white.
Yes.
Is it a pretty mixed crowd, the sommelier group, or do you find it's mostly white people? Rich white people.
Oh, no. Rich? Oh, absolutely not with rich. Throw that out right now.
That's shocking.
Sommeliers don't make a ton of money. What you get is the perks. You get to travel, things like that. You get to try great food and great wine.
So it's like working at Club Med when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Like, if you're lucky enough to work on a cruise ship or something, you don't really make any money, but you tour the world and you have free meals.
Exactly. Same thing with a flight attendant. They don't make a lot of money, but they get really cheap flights.
So, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So get rid of the economic one. As for in terms of race, yeah, it's certainly, at least here in North America, it is, I'd say, 60-70% white.
Mm-hmm.
So higher than the average number of Caucasians versus non-Caucasians.
So do you count as diversity?
No. I'm
okay,
like that.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, I'm like that.
Just checking.
Certainly lots of women. In terms of the male to female split, at least in my world, I know far more women in wine than men.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. But that's really not what I wanted to get to. I just made the observation that it's a magazine
cover
with...
A lot of white men and white women. Yes.
All right. So, but it's the editor's picks, our personal recommendations. We never talk about wine. Mm. So, Matt, why don't you give everybody who drinks wine out there a recommendation?
Okay.
A bottle under $25 you can easily pick up at your LCBO.
I'm going to go cheaper than that, Bob. I'll go under $12.
Ooh, man of the people.
That's right. It's called...
Under 12?
Under 12.
Wow. And it's not vinegar?
No. Under 12.
Right.
Connoisseur, C-O-N-O, second word, S-U-R. It is from Chile. It's a large company, obviously. If you're going to get cheap wine, you're not getting the little artisanal fellas. Their Viognier, white wine, and their Pinot Noir are really good. Especially
is Pinot Noir white?
No, Pinot Noir is red. That's red wine.
Of course it would be. Because it's,
okay, the word noir. So both these wines, what I like about them is they taste and smell like what they're supposed to, especially Viognier. And we call that just varietal typicity, which is a fancy way of saying, does this wine smell and taste like what the grape is? So Connoisseur, it's a Chilean wine. Try the Viognier and try the Pinot Noir. I had the Pinot yesterday. It's like $11. Same thing with the Viognier. Really good.
I feel like you and I should always have every episode, you do a wine recommendation and I do a restaurant or a recipe recommendation.
Sure.
And I told you, and I intend to do this, you inspired me when you studied your wine stuff, because I've been with you for most of the journey.
Yeah.
Right? You started sincerely studying to become a sommelier right around the same time we started working together.
Actually, like, I mean, I got into wine around 2000. When I seriously got into studying was during my Sun TV days, which you were a guest on the show on on the old grill room.
Maybe it's just because I saw you doing it all the time, and you would often during commercial breaks. I would see you drunk a lot. It's funny when I look back at the pictures of you and I from 10, 15 years ago, and we're both drunk.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, it's just you.
It's just me drunk. Why do I feel the final picture is you visiting me in the hospital? I'm going for a liver transplant. And yet even in that picture, still drunk.
Yeah, look, I'm the one on a cleanse right now. So who's got more to apologize for?
What did you have for lunch today, Bob?
You saw me drink it. I had protein powders with a kind of a powdery vegetable thing and water.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the idea of cleansing, like nobody cleanses with Cheetos.
That's a good point.
Right, like I'm going to wash out my colon with some spare ribs.
Yeah, that you know what? Excellent point. No one ever goes, "Woo, I am full." This cleanse, I got to tell you, and you pat your belly with that satisfied little tap, tap, tap sort of thing.
Here's a quick, just off the top of my head, quick restaurant recommendation. Yeah. I made this one before, but I can't say it enough. If you love Vietnamese food, and especially if you're a vegetarian and you're frustrated you don't have good options, Golden Turtle on Ossington in between Queen and Dundas, the best vegan pho. Should be an oxymoron, but it isn't. Vegan pho, I tell you, it's great. Check it out, Golden Turtle. Tell them that Bob sent you, and they'll probably go, "Who's that?"
Yeah, we need some way to get these restaurants to give us money, because we gave a big shout out a couple weeks ago to Jacobs.
And they gave me a hat there.
Jacob?
Not Jacobs. No.
A Golden Turtle.
Golden Turtle. They gave me a free hat and a free T-shirt.
That's not bad.
And when I wear it down the street, the people who know, they give you the high five. It's like, "How did you get that?" It's like, "Yo, we spent hundreds of dollars in soup."
By the way, Amy doesn't know my schedule. She's calling.
Right.
I'm not going to pick up the call.
Take it.
No.
See how
no.
she's doing.
All right. Hold on a second. You can vamp for a couple seconds.
Yeah, I can vamp for a couple seconds. Hey, baby. So what else can we get here? I'm thinking in terms of restaurant recommendations here. Something good. Yeah. Apache Burger. That one's so obvious. I think Jumbo Burgers, actually. If you go to Jumbo, which is over by Runnymede and Dundas, that's a damn fine burger from back in the day. Are you back with us, Matt?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right.
Yeah.
So can we talk about the Leafs to start?
Sure.
Okay. Here's what I realized about last night's loss. That ultimately, if this had happened 2 months before, we probably would have panicked. But they are so clearly entrenched in the spot they're in.
Yeah.
That nobody cares what happens now. Like, Anderson didn't look great. There was no Austin Matthews. They gave up 3 and then ultimately 4 goals to lose. The defense broke down. It was all the things that you would say, "Oh my God, I hope the Leafs don't do this in the playoffs." Against the team they are most likely to face in the playoffs.
Second round, if they get past Boston.
So, well, that's true. Yeah. They will play Boston first. You're right. And I thought, you know, we're all so numb to the regular season. We're just like a dead nerve at this point. Like, no, nobody cares anymore. We all worked over shoe leather. We've watched now like 70-plus games, and you just can't get a reaction out of anyone anymore.
That's a great point about the timing of it. Like, location, location, location. Because I was bummed out. I was a little bit ticked off by last night's game. But if that was game 12, the rage-o-meter would be much higher. You're right. We have been numbed by the regular season.
It proves all the narratives that we fear are possible in the most obvious way.
Yeah.
And yet my real reaction to that game last night was, if these two teams face off against each other in the playoffs, man, that would be a fun series.
That would be a really fun series.
You've got two teams that are capable of making up any deficit
and
blowing any lead.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take that for 7 games for 200, Alex.
Oh, God,
That looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it'd be more fun than Boston. Boston feels a little bit more grind, a little less room in the neutral zone.
Grindy.
Yeah, this feels, and unfortunately it's not going to happen. But yeah, trading chances, lots of talent. Listen, the Maple Leafs were the better team, you know, we know for a good chunk of that game without Austin Matthews. And then, you know, once Hedman scored, that sense of inevitability eventually took over. You know, it's like from a perfect storm, you know, there you are on the boat with George Clooney and John C. Reilly going, this ain't going to end well. And it didn't.
I love it in that movie when they're fishing and they're catching all the fish. They've taken that extra step and they go out past whatever, you know, threshold is safe.
Yeah.
With the storm coming and they're hauling in the giant tuna and they're high-fiving each other. And you think to yourself, well, I hope that's good tuna.
Yeah.
Because you're going to die.
2 points. Do you think, because it's based on a true story, this is about to get macabre, so we'll keep this part quick. Right before they realize they're going to pass from this mortal coil, do you think they went, wow, that totally wasn't worth it? Like, it's one thing if you push a baby out of the way, and right before the train hits you, at least you have the satisfaction of knowing, I saved that life. All you were trying to do was make sure that people got to eat tuna.
Right. Well, and they got to sell tuna.
Yeah, they got to sell tuna. Like, that seems a little...
I think they were doing it for their families, and they were doing it because they'd been on an unlucky streak, so okay. Maybe there was something there.
Okay, that's good. That makes me feel better.
But I suspect in the last moments, they were probably thinking very little, but probably somewhere when the storm clouds rolled in, they were like, yeah. Oh, man. How fast does this boat go?
Not fast enough. Okay, other thought, because that one's now just going to start to bum me out.
Right.
Do you think fish... watch, like, their favorite movie is A Perfect Storm. Like,
because the fishermen get it?
Because the fishermen get it. Do you think tuna, like, that wins the best picture every year in the tuna world? Or they have got, like, the lifetime achievement at the Tuna Oscars, and it's, you know, A Perfect Storm award goes to.
Well, when sharks watch Jaws, they're rooting for the shark.
Yeah.
So, yes, it makes total sense that the fish, but I like how I said that as though... it were provable fact that when sharks watch Jaws, they cheer for the shark.
That'd be odd if they cheered for the humans. Like, that's some self-hating sharks.
You know, the more I think about it, the more I think Jaws is to movies what sharks are to the food system. Like, it's just a perfect machine.
It is.
Have you ever not enjoyed it?
No.
Never,
God, no,
right?
No.
Never.
No.
You could start watching it at minute 30 or even like with 25 minutes left in the movie.
Doesn't matter.
The three barrels come up. You're like, oh, I'm in.
I know. There's no. Well, there.
It is a remorseless viewing machine.
Yes. Yar. It's like there are movies I have ranked higher in terms of overall just for me. Like, but Jaws is on that list of there's no bad moment, and it is a perfect movie.
You know what's funny? I think we've just proven my point about how little we care about this loss to Tampa Bay, and that we got about 3 minutes in and immediately shifted over to Perfect Storm and Jaws.
All right.
What tuna like to watch?
Then let me, because we are numb about the Leafs.
Can we call this the numb edition?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Absolutely. 100%. And you know why? It's also cold outside. It's, you know, your face gets numb. I have a Leafs-related thing, and this is part of a big question.
Okay.
Because JVR scored 2 more goals. He's got like 33 on the season. And every time he scores, cha-ching.
It's like watching the cab meter just keep going up and up. And by the way, cab young people is what they used to drive before Uber.
Yeah, you stupid young people. Still take cabbies. You can help people out there. So it got me thinking, and it's something that we've dipped our toes in the past. But eventually, at the end of the year, JVR is going to get a new contract. And there's going to be JVR who could probably get 6 years, you know, close to $7 million.
Something at least. I feel like the number 6 is going to be prominently featured.
And the number 40 is also going to be prominently featured and very well could be north of 40. And good for him. This is his last chance. And speaking of timing and location, no better time to locate your 33-goal season when you're about to become an unrestricted free agent. So perfect for him. But then you have the other narrative. Everyone wants him to stay here in Toronto. So what do you always hear? Oh, man, will he take a discount? Is there any way you can get him to convince him to take a hometown discount? So then we got me thinking. Fans don't usually root for owners because your owner is evil people up in their corporate lair sniffed with their sniffers of brandy. But the one time when the average fan roots for the boss versus the worker is contract negotiations. Every fan out, so the majority of Leaf fans out there, you know, blue collar, they don't like the man. But when it comes time to negotiate, they're going to root for the man, in this case, the Leafs organization, to try to screw the worker, in this case, JVR, to take as little money as possible because it helps with your hockey happy.
People like Nazem Kadri's contract, and they like Nazem Kadri more because his contract probably doesn't represent what he could get if he negotiated it again today.
Ding, ding,
which
ding.
Is a funny, weird thing in that you love the player more because he's getting kind of stiffed,
yeah.
Which means he's better for you longer.
Yeah.
There is absolutely this weird, perverse, inverse relationship to how we usually think, which is we don't want to see the little guy get squashed by the big guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the owners have controlled the narrative. They're like the Republican Party in the sense that they're really good at like figuring out how to control a narrative in the public mind.
Yep.
The owners have done a really good job of painting the players as bad people or like somehow their interests are inherently greedy because they want as much as possible.
I think it's greedy. I don't think owners, you know, I don't think it's good for owners to make the players seem bad because that can hurt your eyeballs. But when it comes down to negotiate.
It's like arbitration in that, yes, we don't love you, you know, until you're our guy again. And then we love you.
Then we love you again. Thanks so much.
It's like an arbitration process in the public sphere.
Yeah.
What I really find interesting about that, I mean, not just the emotional thing where it's sort of owners and against our own best instincts, is what the hell are GMs supposed to do in a hard cap sport when it comes to hanging on to talent? Like, the system is literally engineered. Like, it's great for the owners. This is the irony of this. It's great for the owners. They never have to pay
too much. Horrible for the GM.
It sucks for the GM and ultimately for the fan because
and the players.
Because the Leafs, if you could, like, maybe I'm going to come back to another point. Remind me to talk about luxury tax in a second.
Yep.
But my point is we root for the owners and the hard cap, ultimately, because we're cheering for their side. But that's what keeps JVR from staying. Like, the Leafs could keep him. If there was no cap and this was baseball, the Leafs are an incredibly rich team.
Oh, yeah, they would absolutely
keep them.
They could keep them. But this is going to be a time when the negotiations happen. Fans are going to be rooting for JVR, in essence, to get ripped off. That because if you want him to stay here with the tax, with the salary cap, or not tax, with the salary cap, you are going to have to pray and hope that the worker gets ripped off and that the owners, the billionaire owners, get a sweet deal.
You know, one of the funny things about your star players is, and it's one of the hard truths that none of us like about sports and how sports makes money for its owners. Winning isn't the only way owners make money.
Nope.
We'd like to believe that they're kind of invested in this the same we are, which is winning always good, losing always bad. But they win in way more ways than the fans do. Like, we only win on what happens on the game sheet. But when you think about players and what they're worth to a team, they make money for owners in a lot of different ways. Like, I keep thinking back to Jerome McGinley and his final days in Calgary, and people are like, oh, you know, the team's falling off. He's a tradable asset. You got to get rid of McGinley. And in that community, and really across hockey, there was a big discussion, what do you do with McGinley?
Yeah.
And one of the things was, on ice, it probably made sense to just get rid of him, get all the draft picks you could for him, young players, prospects and stuff. But if you're the owner, you know, you're selling rink boards, you know, you're selling advertising, and Scotiabank is a big sponsor, and maybe Jerome McGinley has just signed a big deal with Scotiabank. And so, you know, your number one advertiser has an invested stake in this, and you're trying to sell luxury suites. And, you know, like, the tentacles become so spread out. Like, a Connor McDavid in Edmonton is not making money for them simply by helping them win. You've got a new arena. You're trying to sell luxury boxes. You know, when you think about Brian Burke and his old presentations to all the rich cats who are going to go and buy luxury suites, you know, are you selling, hey, you know, we're going to get really great picks for this? Or, hey, you can bring your clients to watch the best player in the game.
Yep.
It's funny, like, when you actually break it down, how disconnected in some ways the actual on-ice product is from how these guys make their owners money.
And also, don't forget, the number one way these owners make money is franchise values always go up.
Even if
in the fiscal year...
It's like owning a home in Toronto.
Yeah. You can, like, listen, I'm not making any money on my condo. In fact, I'm, you know, I pay taxes and everything else. But the value goes up somewhere down the road. That can help me. Actually, interesting thing here, Bob, and we will get to, you want to talk about luxury tax. One thing you brought up, and maybe this is, you know, a difference between you and me. I don't begrudge the owners. You can't stand when the owners are making all that money. I never begrudge anyone making money. Now, there are certain things that owners can do that will bother me in the process of making money, but just the overall element of, I don't begrudge anyone making money. I don't get angry when I see the owner is worth this much. That's one thing that never, I don't know, I don't have this like strong emotion against that.
The thing is, I have no problem with people who get rich, mm-hmm. you know, because I like to be rich.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's fun for you.
We like getting paid. If someone wants to give me more money, hooray.
100%. And I always thought Miles Davis had it right, which is, you know, if he always said, if I write these songs and I perform and you get rich from it, well, then I should get rich too.
Ding, ding, ding.
You know, and that makes all the sense in the world. The thing that I don't like, and this is more on the NHL, because ultimately they're the ones who approve owners or not, and the board of governors, but if you're an owner and you're not willing to take the risk to build your business, I mean, you've got a hard cap, which basically guarantees you're not going to get fleeced.
Yes.
You've got revenue sharing across, you know, many sports. You know, TV deals get swapped around. You know that your franchise value goes up, even as your competitors, you know, the people you're supposed to be trying to beat, as their value goes up, so does yours.
Look at Vegas and Seattle, how much those teams are going to go for.
100%. And that money winds up getting parsed around all the way. So the rising tide floats all boats. So with all of this in mind, if you're not willing to spend to help your team win, if I may I swear?
Go ahead.
The fuck you got a team for?
Yep. Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people who want teams. There's a lot of rich people out there who would love it. If the least you're going to do is not spend reasonably, like when I listen to Eugene Melnyk talking fire sale,
yeah,
I go crazy.
Yeah.
And the fans do, and people blame the fans like, oh, it's emotional. You don't understand. It's business. No. They understand perfectly well. These are incredibly rich people who have enormous advantages in the marketplace that no other business could ever ask for in a million years.
Yep.
And they still cry poor.
Oh, yeah.
Sell the team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get out.
I agree with you on Eugene. Eugene is a special case. And by the way, it's great. I'm so happy that all these fans are buying billboards, Melnyk
out. It's great, isn't it?
It is. And you know what? Eugene, this is what happens when during the 100th anniversary, you're hinting at moving the team. You know, you could say you didn't mean it, but you went out and said it. There's ramifications for your actions. So.
Should hockey have a luxury tax the way basketball does? Because the Raptors are probably going to have to spend into the luxury tax if they want to keep Van Vliet and DeLon Wright.
Yeah.
And that's a possibility. They might do that. Some teams occasionally spend into the luxury tax.
Well, Gord Miller talked about if a player has been with the team for like 5 years, only 50% counts against the cap. So that way you could keep some of your players. This would actually help. This would help perfectly for the Leafs with JVR.
It's an interesting thought.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think there should be a luxury tax. Because, you know, if teams like this, they should be able to spend more. I would love to see
dynasties help to sell the sport. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that could help keep dynasties together. If Chicago had decided to spend into the luxury tax, maybe they hang on to more of their talent longer.
And they just were eliminated yesterday for the playoffs for the first time in a decade.
Which is kind of one of those interesting pegs in the news world. You call it peg, the stuff you hang a generic story on.
Yep.
The peg for this big topic of yours, owners versus players and the salary cap, is Chicago was, if not the dominant, certainly one of the dominant teams of the last era.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they're going to go through their dark times. And you've got Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. And at the time, you're like, well, you can't lose them.
No, you can't.
But nobody would want those deals now. If you were another team, they would be hard to sell.
Yeah, I mean, unless you were that one piece away and you had $10 million in open cap space to spend, then maybe you do it. But that is an incredibly rare profile.
So remind me, Maddie, because it's such a fascinating topic you threw out, that I want to talk about what I expect owners will ask for in the next CBA and what I expect players should ask for in the next one.
All right.
But before we do that, I want to talk about GMs for a second.
Sure.
So let's say you're Lou Lamoriello or Kyle Dubas or whoever's inherits all these questions for the Leafs.
Don't forget Mark Hunter. I'm the one scouting. I don't know what he sounds like, by the way.
So in a way, apart from the individual negotiation, there isn't much thinking into whether or not you keep Matthews, Nylander, and Marner.
No.
You're just gonna, right?
Yeah, of course.
And you've got a cap to work with, which means that a certain percentage of your cap is going to be doled out over those three players. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple other bigger tickets you got to handle. You know, Freddie Anderson, Zaitsev's around for a little while. You know, you got Morgan Riley, Gardner's coming up. My point is, like, there are just certain things that you're not going to lose in this equation. Do you feel like the hard cap system makes GMing a kind of a lost art. Like, it's sort of more or less like bargain hunting. Like, your GM's real gift at this point in time is to find out who's the best player I can get for 1 year and $3 million.
It is, but that to me is the art. That makes it, in a lot of ways, more difficult. It is about finding the Connor Brown from last year. It's about finding the Kapanens and those guys.
And Ron Hainsey, too.
And Ron Hainsey. It's about finding the 20-year-old and the 37-year-old. Can you find those two players, and you control them in different ways in terms of money and term, but can you find those guys to fit around your stars? So it's funny. I think it actually makes it harder than, like, I mean, we used to always make fun of, you know, Brian Cashman, you know, especially when the Yankees were in their freewheeling days. It's like, how hard is it? Like, hey.
His name was Cashman.
Yeah, I know, exactly. He was the Cashman. I'm not going to sing the song.
You're not?
I'm the Cashman.
Come on, there you go.
He gives you money for your gold. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Come on, that's one of the great characters.
By the way, the great thing about that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't give an F about his belly. Like, this is usually
he's the cash man. Why should he?
But when he wore that Superman spandex outfit with just the gut hanging out there, like, you know, usually you wear the oversized shirt to hide your shame. Not the cash man. His kryptonite was his lack of shame.
Okay, we'll come back to this in a second. Do you remember a long time ago, one of the early sort of dating infomercials you'd get late at night when you came home from the bar was the guy who used to say, go to the phone and call.
Oh, yeah. It's one-on-one, live, discreet. Great. Yep.
So back when Strombo and Merrick and I had a talk radio show on The Fan.
Whatever happened to those two fellas?
They did okay.
All right.
So we actually invited him in. Like, we were an all-night show. So we had, his name was David Bronstein. And
I think
he was like the Prince of Love, or he went something like that.
Yeah.
We were high-fiving each other. We were so excited.
Oh my God.
He was coming in studio to talk with us. And he showed up, and he brought his wife and his mom.
It was
the best. He was like this lovely guy, charming.
No, but you don't want that. You want lecherous version.
But the thing was, he was like, look at these beautiful ladies in all of his commercials.
I know.
He showed up with his wife and his mom.
Anyone listening who doesn't understand, just Google this fella. This is what we had before internet porn. So just keep that in mind.
You really don't get the late night infomercial these days the way you used to.
No, not even. My favorite also is, and these are still on there, it's the, you know, skinny woman where there's something a little bit off of her face, but she's got her, you know, like 0% body fat, and she's lying on the bed, you know, and she's twirling the phone like anyone has a home line anymore.
wearing lingerie
or, you know, crop top and short shorts and or pajamas. And she's just talking about how, yeah, I'm looking to have fun tonight. I'm looking to talk to people like you. I'm like, women like you, A, are never at home, you know, and I love those ads, like the Lava Life and those sorts of ones. Hey, call up now and we can have some fun together.
One of the greatest 30 Rock moments is when they found when Tina Fey, when she was young, she actually did one of those.
Yes.
And she pretended her name was Bożena.
Yeah.
Bożena, the Polish princess.
Yes. Oh, that was good.
She got the lipstick on her teeth.
Yeah.
So good.
And at the end, Shaq's like, I'm listening. Which is when you pee yourself.
Right, because you're laughing so hard. I'm lizzing.
All right, back
nice.
To
that. Okay, back to that.
To economics, so, and the class struggle between the worker and...
You make
and
a good point about GMs and how it's probably harder because you can't just simply spend money to fix your problems. It's like being a Canadian TV producer. You just, money doesn't solve your problems.
No.
You better find many small solutions to many things.
Yeah.
The... I mentioned how I wanted to say, like, in the hard cap system, like the player versus the team. If I'm the team in the next CBA, I think they're going to fight even harder to have the term limits brought even further down from 7 years with the bonus eighth for your own player to probably 5 and 6.
Yeah.
Because the hardest thing, the reason why it's so hard to make these commitments to players is the bloody term. It's not so much the money that you spend in 1 year. It's like even with Patrick Marleau, who's been terrific. But in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, God, but that third year. You know, you pay 3 years to get two really good ones, you hope.
You hope.
And when you get the real star players, like a JVR, now you start saying, okay, we'll give you 7 years, but we hope for 4 good years. Well, that's where it gets painful.
Yep.
And I can really see the owner saying, look, like, especially with the players getting better younger, we got to, and that's where the players are going to fight back, because they want those guaranteed contracts for as long as possible.
And also they want to become free agents sooner. You know, they don't want to have to wait. It's not as bad as what it's like in baseball, but they want to start. What they want is, most athletes, it's all about that second contract. But if you're smart, but unfortunately, like LeBron, it's not about being smart, it's also about being really damn good. You want that third, fourth, and fifth contract, because each one escalates, and each one you make more and more money. Oh, do you want to have a little laugh at Montreal?
Always.
He's coming off a concussion. That's not the funny part. We wish nothing but the best for Carey Price. He's 31, and he's about to go into year one of an 8-year deal worth $84 million. And it's not like he's got a bunch of really talented forwards or defensemen. There's not a ton of talent there. So enjoy that deal there, Montreal.
And that's why Bozak is going to be a Hab, because they're just spending too much money to rebuild. Okay, so that's what the owners will want.
Yep.
You know what I was thinking, though? Because a lot of people talked, this was a big topic about a month ago. You know these topics flare up. They come and they go. A few months ago, or about a month ago, it was the, what's Austin Matthews actually going to get paid?
I think the Leafs were off for 3 days.
Yeah, exactly.
So then that topic always comes up. Just like the last time when they were off, it's who's going to be the succession plan for Lou Lamoriello. Right. It's so predictable.
2 games in a row means what's happening next year in Leafs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's really funny and
guilty
totally
of that
true.
Myself. Very
well, you got to talk about something, right?
You got 4 hours.
You got a four-hour
got
show
four
to
hours.
Do.
4 hours.
So, you know, there was all kinds of discussion. Is it $11 million? Is it $12 million? I started thinking to myself, okay, the star players are allowed to be paid up to 20% of the total cap figure that a team spends.
Yeah.
If you are an agent and a star, and considering that your money at that time of negotiation is totally linked to the size of the cap, why not negotiate percentage of the cap as opposed to actually a hard dollar figure?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, okay, I'm going to make 11.25 for the next 5 years, why not say, I'm going to make 17.5% of whatever the cap is at the beginning of the year? Now, the owners would hate that.
So once again, when it comes to negotiation, you love the player, you root for the player all the time, but when it comes time for the negotiation, you are actively rooting against the best interest of the player. You're rooting for the owner because your hockey happy benefits from getting a deal that is the opposite of your smart idea.
James Myrtle from the Athletic, the managing editor of the Athletic in Canada, he wrote a piece the other day about how Austin Matthews, because of all the injuries, is probably going to miss out on some of the bonuses that he would otherwise get in a healthy year.
Yeah.
And how ultimately that's good for the team, because that's just a little bit of extra money that they can throw towards being productive and competitive next year.
Flexibility.
Yes. It gives them a little bit of extra cash, you know, on the free agent market to maybe pick up a slightly better player. And this is what made me think of this topic that you brought up a while ago, which is, nobody wants to see Austin Matthews get hurt. That's awful.
Yep.
But if he is going to be hurt.
See, this is interesting. How many Leaf fans read that article and at the end of it, their first thought was, I feel bad for Austin Matthews, one of the most talented, gifted players in the NHL, and because of his injuries, he's been denied money he rightfully deserves. How many people had that reaction? Or in door number two, hooray! Though I didn't understand everything James Myrtle wrote here, I understand one thing. The Leafs have more financial flexibility. That could help us get another player. Of those two reactions, which one do you think everyone had?
More money, make good Leaf player.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Door number two.
There you have
it. We love you, Matthews. We just don't want you to get the money that you deserve because we're in a cap system.
It's funny because we throw it out as a big question, but it's not really a question. What it is more of an ironic observation about how we consume sports and ultimately what we as fans and followers of a given team kind of really hope for.
Yeah, absolutely.
What we say and what we believe.
Very different things.
Although I do think the idea, I'd be curious to see if you could ever push that idea of linkage to cap to direct salary expenditure. I think that will never happen because the players lose on basically everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Oh, no. The owners are going to be like, again, we have other stuff to make money. You have got 3.5 years of your prime money earning potential. We can both wait. Let's see who cracks first.
It's funny. I don't think even the PA would like it when it comes really down to it, because they're always trying to protect, like you said, that last contract for its veteran players.
Yeah.
You know, and the veteran players are the ones who get screwed in that deal because an entry-level contract's already collectively bargained.
Yep.
Teams already know what they're going to spend based on that. And it's a small nut to carry, which is why, you know, how many times have we said in a million other places say you can't win unless you have good players on their entry level contract.
Yep.
In a cap system.
100%. Yeah.
What do you want to move on to, pal?
Well, on the numb edition, because I'm a little bit numb on the Raptors.
I'm numb.
I mean, listen.
Did you even watch yesterday?
Good God, no.
No.
Once I saw that DeMar DeRozan was out with, and actually, if I can for a second, I was saying this on the morning show today, so I hate to repeat myself, but when a topic is this important, it bears repeating. To quote from Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. To DeMar DeRozan, to you and your family, please get better. The thigh contusion that you have right now, there is no known cure for thigh contusion, Bob. And whether or not we'll see DeMar DeRozan ever play again, I don't know. He had to miss last night against Orlando with thigh contusion. And that is a debilitating injury that I don't know if he'll come back. So my thoughts and prayers to DeMar.
I was thinking about calling this the thigh contusion edition of the pod. We talked on Monday about how wouldn't it be great if he didn't play against Orlando.
And he didn't.
Mysteriously, his thigh was contused.
It was contused, Bob. Contused.
I hope it spreads to Ibaka and he gets thigh contusion that lets him sit for a little bit.
I can guarantee you this. Kyle Lowry, after playing 37 minutes against Orlando.
Thigh contusion.
Oh, he's got multiple thigh contusion, which doctors have never seen before.
I got a feeling Serge Ibaka on Friday against Brooklyn, that thigh. Wrap it now, Serge. Wrap it now. Yep. You are in danger.
No known cure for thigh
contusion. Okay, so is that the version, like the much more condensed and less, it's like Robida Island for the Leafs?
Yeah.
Now we've got thigh contusion syndrome.
Thigh contusion.
It's for the Raptors?
It's like the flu. It's spreading throughout the locker room. No one is safe.
No one is safe as they're up by 5 on Boston with about 12 games to play.
Yeah, exactly.
From thigh contusion.
Exactly. So I'm a little bit numb. So I wanted to have this discussion about O.J. Simpson. But before we get there, do you have any sort of any bits you want to do? Or do you have a challenge about our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, the Jeff Pollock read?
Which, good point. Yeah. I didn't actually think of anything on the way over here. So why don't I quickly whip up something based on what we discussed?
All right.
Jeff Pollock.
Improv.
Jeff
yes,
Pollock is the tuna fishing of lawyers.
Jeff Pollock is... My God, Bob, that one is. You know what's weird about that? Ooh. I was talking with Jeff the other day, and I actually said, you're like the tuna fishing of lawyers. Let's think about the movie. Let's think about Perfect Storm. What's a perfect storm? Small little ship, small little family, people that care for each other. It's kind of like Jeff Pollock. It's not a large law firm. It's a small one. The sort of law firm where you know the names of his kids, Daniel, Elizabeth, and Alexandra. Why do you know the names? Because you feel like Jeff Pollock is part of your family. Like his wife, Evgenia Pollock. She deals with the accounting. She deals with the financial side, which is another service from Jeff Pollock's firm. It's actually quite simple. And the tuna, it's delicious. And it feels a little bit classy, kind of like Jeff Pollock. So if you need law help, if you need a lawyer, he's our lawyer, helped us with our wills, litigation. He's a guy, states, a trust, corporate, commercial, real estate law, whatever you want. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, 416-777-0088. That number, 416-777-0088. And if he can be our lawyer, he should be your lawyer.
I'll give that one a B+. I feel like you've gone to the well on he's not a big firm, he's a small family firm. You've gone to the well on that one a few
Admittedly,
times.
Admittedly, that analogy, I am fitting in everything, no matter what it is.
I feel like you now are starting to have your talking points and you're just figuring out like, what does my suggestion have to do with your talking points?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Henry Kissinger once said to a crowded room of reporters, okay, now who has the questions for my answers?
Yeah. Oh, God. Evil man, smart man.
Yeah. Sometimes it goes hand in hand that way.
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking as you were actually talking about Jeff's kids?
Yeah.
You got to figure out, as the technical director of the show, how to let people know that there's explicit language in this pod. Because I dropped the F-bomb. You can't let that one slide.
It's going to happen because I don't know how to put the beep
really? In. Are you going to beep it?
No.
Are we going to mention that it's explicit language?
No.
Are we going to have our first warning?
Maybe.
You got to warn people,
Matt. We'll find out. It's one F word.
No.
Kids got to learn the hard way.
No.
They got to learn the hard way, Bob.
Matt, I know as a parent, I would not be happy if I was listening with my kids and I heard that.
I know as a professional uncle, I'd be totally cool with it.
Yeah, it's amazing how uncles are cool where parents are. Yay. It's Uncle Ned.
Let me fix this jukebox. Bam. That's an old musty reference.
I got a .. game I just invented called Rank'em.
Okay.
What do you want to do? Let's do the ..
Yeah.
It's all sporty, but I think you'll appreciate it. All right. So the first one is, man, I want the player. Sorry, let me try it again. Man, I want the Panthers to make the playoffs.
All right.
.. The Bills will probably do a deal with Giants for the #2 overall pick. Then we'll know who the biggest bust of the big four QBs is this year because the Bills will take him. .. And does any truly transcendent athlete look less like a transcendent athlete than James Harden? ..
The third one we'll answer real quick, and then we'll move on. Phil Kessel. So,
but
anyway,
is he really a transcendent athlete? He's a great athlete.
He's
but
an
I mean
all-star?
Transcendent. Like, I'm talking like LeBron level, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Mike Trout,
okay.
Bryce Harper.
If we're going in that level,
because James Harden's the MVP.
Yeah,
and he dusted Portland last night.
Yeah.
And he just I think he went for 42 last night.
Mm-hmm.
He's unstoppable. He's incredible.
Yeah, and he's a little. He's not chiseled. He's got a giant beard, and when
he's got the hillbilly Jim
beard, yeah,
Appalachian hipster beard.
And when you think about off-season regime, you think strip clubs before you think, you know, Tom Brady's diet. So
he's not rage eating an extra almond.
No, he's not rage eating an extra almond after losing the Super Bowl. I get what you're saying. Like, to me, Kessel is the ultimate example, but maybe Kessel's not on the level of sports excellence in his respect to sport the way Harden is.
Kessel is just below the bubble of making the Hall of Fame, probably. I actually sadly went and checked out all his numbers to figure, would he be a Hall of Fame player?
Yeah.
Just below.
Oh, right now.
Just below.
They win another cup, and if he's a big part of it,
we'll see.
Kessel will eventually get into the Hall. If he does that, he'll get in the Hall of Fame. Not first year, but he'll get in the Hall of Fame.
But James Harden's going to win MVP.
Yeah.
In an NBA filled right now. Like, they're at like peak talent levels right now.
Should be LeBron, by the way.
Probably should be LeBron.
Should be LeBron.
He's incredible.
Harden has got Chris Paul. What does LeBron have?
It's funny that they're playing the Cavs tonight, because ordinarily I'd use this as a measuring stick, but I'm just trying to pretend the Cavs don't exist right now, because Kevin Love is back. And we haven't seen the new lineup with Kevin Love in it. But more importantly, LeBron hasn't had anyone to play with. Weren't we laughing the other day? Who's the second best player?
Rodney Hood.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
But now we know.
Yeah.
And it's Kevin Love. So we'll see what they look like going into the playoffs with a bona fide all-star on his hip.
Yeah.
Now we'll see. I'm terrified of them, and I'm just so hopeful that they're the 3 seed going in so that we don't have to face them until the conference final.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. And then, you know, you face like if you could do Miami, Indiana, and then Cleveland, that's how you want to do
anybody.
It. Just like 2 years ago, Miami, Indiana, and Cleveland.
Yeah, let's do a redo.
Yeah,
you're right. We'll just do a total reset.
It's 2016, everybody. Woo! Wow. Remember 2016? Trump? He's trying to run against the other Republicans for president. This fella. Woo-hoo-hoo. That's never going
to
happen.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. You're fired. Yeah, he'll be president one day. Weirdo.
All right, shall we move on?
Yeah.
You didn't want to touch the one with the Bills and the Giants?
Oh, no. Real quick. I want the Giants to do that deal because if the Jets gave up 3 second rounders to switch spots with the Colts and move up, I think, like one spot, I want the Bills to do that with the Giants. The Giants can get even greater haul. They're not desperate for a quarterback. There's a lot of good quarterbacks, but there's not that Andrew Luck, oh, this guy's no way. This guy's going to fail. So, yeah, I hope they do it, because also to mean that whatever quarterback goes to Buffalo will fail and we can all giggle and laugh.
Because I believe Nathan Peterman is the only quarterback under contract right now for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get somebody.
Oh, yeah.
They simply have to. And so now you're dealing with a motivated seller.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get bilked. I hope this Josh Allen kid is good. The one thing I do know is Cleveland will pick someone first.
Yeah.
That probably will be the worst of the 4 quarterbacks.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And at least whoever the Bills take, he's got cover, because everyone's focus, you know, everyone's making fun of Cleveland. Buffalo at least made the playoffs. So they're a little bit under the radar in terms of our derision and scorn.
Can we just agree on one thing, though?
Sure.
When it comes, like, people obsess over the NFL draft, and for good reason. And it's also kind of fun, never mind the impact that it has on your squad. But nobody knows nothing when it comes to quarterback. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can reasonably predict wide receivers. Maybe you can reasonably predict, you know, edge rushers, you know, safeties. But quarterbacks, nobody knows nothing. There are too many variables. Of course, the physical profile makes a difference. But just because of the level of difficulty at the next level, nobody knows.
Yes.
Like, I could say, and I will say, hey, Matt, when they trade up, I hope they get Josh Allen.
Sure, why not?
He's got a huge arm.
He sure
probably
does.
Probably can play in Buffalo in December.
There you go.
You know how sure I am of that?
Mm.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Maybe Baker Mayfield's going to turn out to be the, you know, the next Steve Young.
Sure. I mean,
who
just
knows?
Like,
sure.
Did Steve Young once get arrested and fled from the cops for public intoxication?
Yes. And on the BYU campus.
The BYU
absolutely.
Campus. Yeah, I'm sure that
BYU
happened.
BYU campus police.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're armed.
Yeah. Speaking of Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
Tim Graham from the Buffalo News wrote, did an interview with O.J. Simpson. And part of the parameters was they're not going to talk about, as O.J. called it, the L.A. thing or the crap stuff. But it got me thinking about O.J. Simpson.
Okay.
It's a good piece. I interviewed Tim Graham, and it's, you know, it feels a little bit incomplete, but it is a really interesting profile on O.J. Simpson. It doesn't glorify or him whatsoever. What O.J. Simpson reminds me of Joe Paterno and Bill Cosby. All those guys were giants within their respective industry, were loved, were crossover in so many ways, especially O.J. and Bill Cosby. And then because of horrible decisions and just incredible their heinous actions, their final legacy within the span of a couple of years, like they spent decades and decades and decades growing this legacy, and then within the span of a couple of years, the first sentence in their eulogies is so much different. Think about O.J. Simpson, the first sentence in his eulogy now versus what it was in Naked Gun. Same thing with Paterno. Same thing with Bill Cosby. And with O.J., the main thing I took away from this piece, he desperately wants for people to eventually, when they write that obituary, the first couple sentences are about 2,000 yards rushing in a 14-game season.
Is that possible?
No. Oh, no. With O.J., it's done. Your legacy is now set. It will not be about football.
What if he admitted he did it? What if he came out and said, I can't live with this guilt anymore. And yes, I did it. Mm-hmm. And I can never be truly sorry until I take responsibility for my actions. And I can never make amends with my family until I admit what I did. And I'm sorry.
One other thing you got to throw in there.
Hmm.
CTE. You've got to have doctors say that he's been suffering for it from years. And O.J. doesn't say, oh, it's because of the CTE, but you let that just sit there. Maybe if that happens, you will get some people that'll be maybe a little bit more sympathetic. But I don't know. I think when we look back at O.J., the first paragraph, it'll mention the word running back, but the first paragraph, his legacy is going to be murderer, huckster, sham, Vegas crime. And that's how he will be remembered.
There's only one thing that can save a person's reputation in those kinds of, in the face of great celebrated career versus, you know, just incredible precipitous fall from grace because of terrible crimes you've committed. There is only one thing that can save you, and that is guilty.
Yeah.
You have to plead guilty.
Yeah.
Because if you don't plead guilty and nobody believes it, like Joe Paterno, when we talk about him, the Al Pacino movie's coming out soon on HBO, and it looks really good.
It does.
And that story was so ugly, the whole Penn State cover-up, and it made you realize these people are capable of just about anything in the name of winning. Like what they talk about protecting in the Protect the Shield, you know, they're not talking about protecting the sanctity of the American home during wartime. They're talking about protecting the reputation of a freaking university football program.
Yeah.
Like
they
sound insane,
literally
insane. And then you realize that there's their own egos wrapped up into it, you know, and how they're the defender of some great ideal that they embody. Like Joe Paterno sounds insane, and he was probably the greatest football coach at a college level in history.
Yes, he is. He's on that Mount Rushmore. Absolutely.
You know, like Nick Saban is no saint, but at least Nick Saban, you got to believe, is just an asshole.
Yes.
You know, he's probably 100%. Not hiding, you know, serial sex abusers with kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my point is the only thing that would have saved Joe Paterno in all of this, and he's dead now, so he can't do it.
Can't.
Is to say, yes, I knew.
Yeah.
and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I walk away. And but because he never did that, we'll always remember him as the person who put his own image and the school's image above literally the welfare of children.
And has there been a bigger fall than Bill Cosby? When you think of how big he was in...
Well, Paterno's pretty big.
I know, but in the 60s, 70s... But also, Paterno didn't directly do it. Paterno just...
What did you know and when did you know it?
Yes. But the difference is Bill Cosby actually, you know, molested, assaulted women.
Well, OJ's a pretty big fall, too.
Oh, and I know.
You know, like, OJ was a genuine superstar.
Oh, yeah. But Bill Cosby was the biggest. Like, he was... You know, he was up there with Oprah, with Tom Cruise, like whoever the biggest stars of the 80s were. And also Bill Cosby was huge in the 70s and even right. into the late 60s.
Into the 60s, absolutely, yeah. with and I now, Spy.
And now think about what just what he is. Like it's I always link those three together in terms of just giants in their field, and the way we view them now could not be more different.
Well, this is a very important conversation because I think we're in the process now of revising a lot of ways we look at things, mm-hmm. whether it's Confederate statues or the legacies of great people that did terrible things while they were accomplishing enormous feats.
Yep.
And I think just as a culture, we're kind of collectively taking a step back and saying, okay, well, maybe it's not okay to break a few eggs on the way to making an omelet. And I mean that in the most, you know, colloquial sense.
Yeah.
But we've always sort of looked past the ugliness of our heroes because of what they accomplished, because we're a society that loves success.
Yes.
You know, the mythology is never complete unless you really reach the top of the mountain. And when people do, the dirtier parts of the journey are often forgotten. Now, in the case of a Cosby or a, you know, I mean, that's murder, that's, you know,
there's murder,
sexual
rape.
Assault. Yeah, yeah. Like that's obviously no small thing. But I think even in the way that people treat other people is now under scrutiny. Mm-hmm. There's people that we might have simply said, oh, you know, powerful person does terrible things.
Yeah.
Know? It's the cost of getting there.
Yeah, onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I don't know that we're as willing to accept that anymore.
No, I don't think we are.
And is it... It's not a bad thing, obviously, in the sense that it holds people to the standard of being actual human beings.
Yeah.
But I think we better be prepared for a real dark look at ourselves, just individually and as a culture, because I think there's a lot of shit in those lockers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
You know? Do you think we're willing to do it?
Yeah.
Do you think we're really but willing to look at ourselves?
What does that mean? What does it mean to look? Like everyone always says, well, it's time for us to have a dialogue. What does that actually mean? How does that manifest itself? And what actually happens because of it?
Well, and that's a great question.
Because I have no answer to that.
Well, let's look at our politicians.
All right.
Trump is an easy one to rip down because he's an ignoramus on one hand and a horrible human being on a lot of other hands. So
yes.
that's a very easy person to disparage. But how many people are going to take that office without having something in their closet that they've done? Mm-hmm. Whether it was a decision they made for their own benefit or the way they've treated people along the way, it's
almost impossible to climb that level of power without doing things that wouldn't be seen as distasteful. It's almost impossible.
I remember somebody I knew who took on a really big job as a young person once looked at me, and I sort of knew this person as their climb. You know, it's you know, their climb from sort of the middle of the ranks to the top.
Yeah.
And when they reached the top, they were like, man, it is hard to be a good person up here. Because the decisions that you have to make are no longer small. Like, they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And people have less sympathy for not succeeding.
To quote, my favorite podcaster, Adam Carolla. And he was doing this joke. And he's like, okay, to all the women out there, if you want to know if your husband could be someone that cheats on you, here's the range of men that have cheated on their wives: Donald Trump, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Stephen Hawking. If your husband somehow falls within that range, your husband may have cheated on you. So just to get to it about all the rise and the great, you know, all the great people, there's a murky, complicated past with most everyone.
Do you know what I hope happens? And we probably can't do this just because of the way we're wired and the society that we've built for ourselves to live in. But what I really hope happens is the person who walks down the street and holds a job and treats his friends or her friends and family really well,
yeah,
that we actually acknowledge the incredible act of strength and heroism it is not to be a great person, but to be a good person. Mm. You know, we tend to value this idea of greatness, and we tend to sort of look past the idea of goodness as though it were sort of a consolation prize. For those who aren't capable of greatness, well, there's always goodness that you could strive for. And we really need to invert that, you know. And is it possible to be... Like, I've looked at my own career, and I've thought about this a lot in my life, and I thought I've kind of hamstrung myself. And I don't pretend to be a perfect person by any stretch, but I never wanted to do it the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, and there's decisions that I've made that were not just about getting ahead, because I didn't want to be the kind of person who would be wired to make decisions solely based on the criterion of getting ahead. You know, have a family, be a good father, those kinds of things, they matter. That has to be built into the definition of my personal
yeah.
greatness, whatever that might be in this path. But my point is, rising up in any industry or rising up just generally in life, this image of greatness is the enemy of good.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
You know, great is the enemy of good, just as much as good is the enemy of great. And, you know, you talk about OJ. In all the stories about OJ, the one threshold he could never cross, people won't love me anymore. It's the one freaking thing that could turn a monstrous person into a total and absolute liar. Like, that was the heart of the illusion. That's not why he killed her, but it's why he lied about it.
Yep.
It's because he just couldn't bring himself not to be loved.
It's a pretty heavy way to end this podcast.
Are we ending it here? You're the one who brought up OJ.
I know.
You brought up OJ, Joe Paterno, and Bill Cosby. Did you think we were going out with yucks?
Yeah, that's a good point, Bob.
You know, I brought up James Harden's beard, yeah. and you quickly turned it into a rapist,
murderer,
and conspiratorial. Enabler. So way to go, Matt. Enjoy Florida.
Sorry, everybody.
Can we take 30 seconds to talk about something happy?
Yeah, I'm going to Florida tomorrow, Bob.
Nice. Yay. Are you going to do any splashy splash in the ocean?
Oh, God, I'm going to eat great food, drink good wine. I'm going to be on the beach. It's going to be glorious.
Are you going to be on the cover of Wine Spectator one day? Come on, give me a Florida-based wine that's delicious.
I don't have any. It's mostly fruit wine down there, and I'm just not a fan.
Floridian wine suck?
Well, it's so hot there that, like, for the most part, the wines they make are like fruit-based wine, like
blueberry wine.
Yeah, I know California's hot, but also their microclimate because of the high temperatures and stuff. You get cooler nights and things like that.
Microclimate.
Yeah, Florida's a pretty flat state.
Right. Or Matt, yeah. Is it the terroir?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think it has the limestone required for, like, say, Pinot or Chardonnay. Great point by you, Bob. What a way to go out of my indulgentness. And Bob, my final sentiment here.
As we go for 10 days.
I'm going to quote my favorite quote in the history of The Simpsons, history of the world, Sideshow Bob, to the greatest moment of all, better than the deed, better than the memory, the moment of anticipation. And oh boy, when I'm done work tomorrow, Bob, then it's only Florida for the next 10 days. It's going to be great.
Matt, I love you, but you screwed up. You done screwed it up.
How?
It's Jacques Brunswick who says that, not Jacques. Sideshow Bob.
Did I say Sideshow Bob?
Yes.
Oh, good God. Yeah,
Jacques Brunswick in the famous bowling episode.
Yes, he was the bowling
Jacques,
instructor.
You're really going to strike out tonight.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cos podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.